So today's talk, I'm just calling intimacy. And this, as I was preparing this talk, it's a very big, profound topic. So I hope you are able to take this today's Dharma talk as being kind of a stab. It's not gonna be like, oh, and it's all tied up in a bow and I get it. It's gonna be some broad brush strokes, some thought-provoking things, hopefully, and just understand that it's not an incredibly organized, well-digested thing. It might become thus as that's turned into a podcast episode. But in the meantime, your comments and questions can be part of the formative stages of this discussion. So I thought about doing this talk because on Tuesdays we've been studying Dogen's Genjo Koan. And in several places in that text, Dogen uses words that can be translated, that some translators translate, as intimate or intimately. And one example is, when we intimately practice and return right here, it is clear that all things have no fixed self. So I think it was last Tuesday we talked about what does that really mean. Now the word that is translated as intimately is shita shiku, closely, directly, intimately, firsthand. It's an adverb. Based on the noun shin, the shita turns into is shin, which means intimacy, closeness, friendliness. So in another part of the Genjo Koan, Shohaku Okumura translates it as, in seeing color and hearing sound with body and mind, although we perceive them intimately, the perception is not like reflections in a mirror or the moon in water. So again, we discussed the meaning of this in the Tuesday class. I'm not going to go into it here. I'm just kind of focusing on that, the intimate part. So Shohaku Okumura, in his book on the Genjo Koan, has this to say about this intimately, to perceive intimately. He says, in Buddhist teachings, we are what we eat has a deep meaning. When I hold a glass of water, for example, the water is there and I am here. But wondrously enough, when I drink the water, it becomes part of me. When I breathe, part of the air becomes part of me. We are what we eat, drink, breathe, hear, smell, taste, and see. There is no me that exists other than the things that make up my body and mind. We are intimately connected to things in our environment, so much so that they are actually part of us. We are all the things that we experience. We are created by them. Without this relationship with all things, we would not exist even for one moment. In reality, I, you, and all other beings do not exist at all. Only relationships and interactions exist. So one more use of intimacy in Genjo Koan. This is Dogen again. Although complete enlightenment is immediately actualized, its intimacy is such that it does not necessarily form as a view. In fact, viewing is not something fixed. So there's a different word being used here and then translated as intimacy, and that is mitsu. And the meaning of this word, this character, is secrecy, minuteness, carefulness, and private. So just out of curiosity, I have the Dogen's Shobogenzo, which is, you know, if it's the physical book is like this, I have one version that's in four volumes, but I have it on Kindle, so I was able to search for the word intimate. And it shows up 172 times. And intimacy shows up 17 times. And I found there was a whole fascicle that Ta-Nehisi translates the title as intimate language. So this, I'm not even going to go into this fascicle, but just the very existence of it I thought was interesting. Mitsugo. And another translator, Nishijima and Cross, they translate it as secret talk. So that mitsu, again, is this secret, private. And they say, in explanation of the name of that essay by Dogen, they say mitsu means secret or mystical, in the sense of not apparent to the senses or the intellect, but experienced directly or immediately, as if two things are touching. Go means words or talk. So mitsugo means secret talk. That is something communicated directly without sound. In Buddhism, it is said that there is secret talk that can be recognized and understood even though it has no sound. So secret talk suggests the existence of intuitive perception. It is a fact that we can sometimes discover meaning or secrets without receiving any external stimuli. But we need not see the fact as particularly mystical. An analogy that helps to understand such facts is the sympathetic resonance of tuning forks. So that's Nishijima and Cross. So I'm actually not going to focus so much on Dogen, even though I kind of wanted to give you a sense of that this concept of intimacy pervades many different aspects of Zen literature. But one that I really did want to focus on is one, it's a story from Zen master Keizan's Denkaroku. So the Denkaroku is the transmission of light. So this is written by Zen master Keizan. So he was four Dharma generations after Dogen. And this is the story. There's a chapter for Shakyamuni and Makakasho and Ananda and all the teachers in our lineage up until, I think it goes to Dogen, and then it goes to Dogen's disciple Ejo. So obviously it doesn't go beyond Keizan because he wrote it. So that's like, I think it's 85. No, that's 53 ancestors. And so we, in our tradition, we haven't started doing this, but at Darin where I trained, we have an annual session, Denkowei session, which always focuses on one chapter from this book. So over the years, you know, I've been exposed to the different chapters, and this one always, I don't know, just this is one that's stuck with me, very resonated with a great deal. So there's several different translations, and this translation that I'm using right here is by Francis Cook. And this is the ancestor Ryozan Enkan, I think is what we say in our chant. Liangshan Yuanguan is the Chinese version. Ryozan Enkan is like the Japanized way to pronounce it. So here is the little story. So every one of these starts, it's like the koans in the sense that it's a story of an interaction between a teacher and a student. Yuanguan is what the student's name, and Tonggan is the teacher. Once Tonggan entered the hall and was supposed to wear his robe. So when it was time, the master, and he wasn't a master yet. This is the student, right? This is Yuan Guang. So the master brought the patchwork Dharma robe. So the patchwork Dharma robe is like the robe that a monk or a transmitted lay teacher wears. I wore it during Zazen. And if you look closely at it, you'll see that it's made up of many different pieces. So the idea is that this would be made up of discarded cloth. And you just get a piece of cloth here, a piece of cloth there, and patch it all together. And that was the traditional robe of Buddhist monks. So that a Buddhist monk's robe. But when he's talking about this, let me get to that point. As he took the robe, Tonggong asked, "What is the business beneath the patch robe?" So in other words, you know, that so this is when you're reading these koan stories, it's like there is a history here, right? There's a history between the teacher and student. It's not like you walked in off the street and I say, "What's the business beneath the patched robe?" And you're like, "What are you talking about?" That once the teacher and student have gotten to know each other, you know, there's a question beneath this question. You know, so this is the question of like, all right, so here we are going about our practice. You're bringing me this robe. The robe is a sign that we have vowed to live our whole lives, you know, in service to deepening our understanding of the Dharma. What is this all about? What is this for? What is the business beneath this patched robe? So that's relevant, of course, to those of us who aren't monks as well, that what is this practice about? The master had no answer. Tonggan said, "Studying the Buddha way and still not reaching this realm is the most painful thing. Now you ask me." The master asked, "What is the business beneath the patch robe?" Tonggan said, "Intimacy." The master was greatly awakened. He made full bows and tears of gratitude wet his robe. Tonggan said, "Now that you have had a great awakening, can you express it?" Yuan Guang said he could. Tonggan asked, "What is the business beneath the patch robe?" The master said, "Intimacy." And Tonggan said, "Intimacy, intimacy." So obviously this is not obviously, this is not about, oh, I got the right answer, right? The answer was intimacy. I mean, who there's some significance to the fact that Yuan Guan was able to answer, right? The teacher wouldn't have been satisfied. He was just parroting, "Well, you just said it was intimacy, so I guess that's the answer, right?" There was, the student was able to, you know, got what it meant. Was able to manifest that in that moment. So there was a connection between teacher and student that, you know, moved the student to tears, which of course I always resonate with the tears. And then, because he says, I can't find it immediately, but basically it says that later on his teaching focused on intimacy, and he often spoke about it, and he often wept as well. So we're going to talk about more about intimacy. I'm going to be deeper into the English word, but I wanted to share with you two other translations so you can understand, like, you know, we may kind of fixate on the word intimacy, but it's not... it's a translation. And unfortunately, I don't know, because I have the kanji by kanji for the Genjo Koan, the Japanese characters, but I don't have that for the Denkaroku. So I don't know what Japanese word is being translated in these different ways here, which is a little frustrating, but there it is. So This is the translation by Thomas Cleary. So he says, what is the business under the patchwork robe? The young Shan had no answer. Tonggon said in studying Buddhism, if you don't reach this state, that is most miserable. You ask me and I'll tell you. Young Shan said, what is the business under the patchwork robe? Tonggon said, it is within. And then Tonggon asks him, can you express it? Young Shan said, it is within. And Tonggon said, inner being, it exists within. So intimacy, or it exists within. And then this other translation, this is from the Shasta Abbey book. The translation is by Nierman. And Shasta has its own quirky way of doing things where certain significant terms in the text, particularly if they are Chinese characters, they put it in capital letters, like little capital letters, so that you know, like, this is important. Like, this is, you know, there's something to be unpacked here. Don't gloss over this word. So I'll let you know when the words are capitalized. So one day, Kanchi asked him, what is it? Capital I, capital T. What is it that is important, that lies beneath amongst Kesa? When Ryozan did not respond, Kanchi said, it is most distressing if you have not reached this stage in your study of Buddhism. Put the question to me and I will tell you. When Ryozan asked him, what is it that is important, that lies beneath amongst Kesa? Kanchi answered, the unseen. The unseen is capitalized. The unseen. Whereupon Ryozan had a great awakening to his true self. And true self is capitalized. And then the little further interaction when he asks the student to express it, Kanchi commented, the unseen exists. The unseen exists. After that, Ryozan spoke of the existence of the unseen whenever the opportunity arose. So we have intimacy, we have it is within, we have the unseen. So definitions of the word intimate. So I tend to use dictionary.com, and there were 12 definitions of the adjective intimate. I'm just going to read them off. Associated in close personal relationships, as is an intimate friend. Characterized by or involving warm friendship, or a personally close or familiar association or feeling, an intimate greeting. Very private, closely personal, one's intimate affairs. Characterized by or suggesting an atmosphere conducive to privacy or intimacy. Warm or cozy, an intimate little cafe where we can relax and talk. Of an association, knowledge, understanding, etc., arising from close personal connection or familiar experience. Engaged in or characterized by sexual relations. Too young to handle an intimate relationship. Of women's clothing, worn next to the skin, under street or outer garments, a store that sells intimate apparel. Detailed, deep, a more intimate analysis. Showing a close union or combination of particles or elements. An intimate mixture. Inmost, deep within. of, relating to, or characteristic of the inmost or essential nature, intrinsic, the intimate structure of an organism. Of, relating to, or existing in the inmost depths of the mind, intimate beliefs. So my sense of it is that we know intimacy when we experience it, when we know it, but you know, you can't really put your finger on it very well. Feel like these, all of these different definitions, as we say, they're like fingers pointing to the moon, right? They're not the moon itself, but we're trying all these different ways to point at, to describe this experience. So what does intimacy, or whatever word we're going to use, what does this mean in our spiritual practice? I think, and if you disagree, by all means, when we open it up for comments and questions, you know, share. But I think all human beings, perhaps all beings, most beings, beyond the human even, long for a sense of connection. The very nature of life means the birth and existence of individuals, of little parcels of life, which then replicate, or they reproduce, and they go on and make more individuals. But it's like, individual is the unit of life. So our individuality is central to our nature, and it's very important to us. I mean, that's part of the whole like Buddhist matter, right? We're very, very concerned about ourselves, our individual selves. But at the same time, there's a tension. We want to feel connected and not separate. We want to feel like we belong to something greater than us. We want to experience closeness. But we're also kind of two minds about that. There's that tension, you know, closeness can be scary. It can threaten our sense of individuality if we get too close and intimate and the boundaries start to seem to dissolve. It can threaten our sense of individuality, our central sense of self. So we live in this place of tension, like fiercely guarding our individuality, but also longing for intimacy. And sometimes that longing, if unrequited, is terribly painful. If we're lucky, we had at least one loving parent or guardian with whom we are able to feel intimate, close, without worrying about protecting the self, without worrying about boundaries, a sense of belonging, a sense of unconditional acceptance. And then many of us experienced our first really true or intense sense of intimacy with a sexual or romantic partner. And then we often keep seeking or depending on such relationships for our need for intimacy. Of course, there are other ways, other places we feel intimacy, our connection with animals, with nature. This is probably, like I said, a huge topic we could go into, all the ways that human beings seek intimacy. But one of them that occurred to me is that people may also find this belonging to a group that deliberately intensifies individual loyalty, kind of manufacturing and heightening a sense of intimacy, like cults. So Zen practice is meant to help us awaken to our unconstrained intimacy with everything in the universe. It's a that's my premise for today. Zen practice is meant to help us awaken to our unconstrained, unlimited intimacy with everything. It's funny because one of my Dharma teachers, Kyogen, he would say the Dharma is like a tomato and there's many different ways to slice it. So it can be a little confusing at first, right? Because, well, on Sunday, Dongye said it was all about intimacy. And then, you know, the next week she talked, it's about devotion. And the next week it's about like letting go of self. And I mean, what is it about? And it's like, today we're slicing it up with a focus on intimacy. So it's like, again, like the finger pointing at the moon, the Dharma, the truth that we're trying to get at really can't be described. So one day we, you know, it's like art or poetry. One day we describe it this way, and the next day we describe it that way, and the next day, you know, it's a different impression. But nonetheless, we still become more familiar and our understanding grows. And sometimes a particular way to slice the Dharma tomato really makes sense to us or appeals to us. So Zen practice is meant to help us awaken to intimacy, unconstrained, unlimited intimacy. And what are we, helps to ask ourselves, what are we searching for? What are we really longing for? You know, so we've had a different bunch of different words attached to this concept or idea today, right? So we had this shin, intimacy, closeness, friendliness. We had mitsu, which was secrecy, minuteness, carefulness, private, mystical, not apparent to the senses. We've had the it is within, the unseen. And the definitions of intimate, personal, close, familiar, deep, inmost, deep within, essential, intrinsic, existing in the inmost depths of the mind. So imagine, if you can, your longing for intimacy is just like perfectly fulfilled. Imagine a moment where it's just perfectly fulfilled. For me, that would be being seen, like somehow that part that is usually unseen, usually not apparent, is somehow apparent, and yet I am unconditionally embraced. That you know, the parts that I might hide or not relate to or whatever are seen in all of its truth and nakedness, and yet the response is acceptance, unconditional acceptance, warm, kind acceptance. And there's a interesting aspect here where it's like this intimacy only is meaningful because of the individuality, right? It's like it's the individual being accepted and embraced, not like washed away. It's the individuality is embraced. There would be a sense of belonging, of that sense of separateness or inadequacy or fear of rejection being transcended. The end of fear. And what is usually unseen, what is deep within becomes manifest, kind of like true authenticity or integration or something that somehow this, you know, who you really are is now apparent or participating in some way. And I'm sure there's many different other things here too, but also the end of loneliness. A real, I can't think of a better way to describe it, but like an electric sense of the presence of the other. That a lot of times just feeling like, you know, the world is a lonely place and we're all just separate from each other, of just like, you know, there is the other, or the others, or, you know, there's a sense that we're not alone. So how does practice help us approach this? And this is where today I was like, it was time for me to get ready to go. I had gotten to this point and I'm like, wow, well, there's a lot to be said there too. How does practice help us approach this? I guess, you know, just to summarize, in reality, we are intimate with everything, as Okamura was describing. So in a way, Zen is, or Buddhism is about working on our delusions, you know, softening and working through our delusions, which obscure this reality from our sight. And I think it's not any one thing in our practice. It's, you know, it's zazen, it's study, it's interaction with sangha, it's interaction with other people in our lives as we're carrying the intention of practice. We work toward intimacy gradually, I think. I mean, sometimes there might be little jump starts, but because we learn through experience how it doesn't destroy us, right? We have to kind of build up a sense of comfort and trust with that intimacy, because it feels like it could be at odds with our individuality. When we work toward letting go momentarily of our sense of self, our sense of separate, small self, feels sometimes like in Zazen, what I'm trying to do, not that I'm necessarily doing it all the time there, right? But what I'm aiming for is to sit there without a name, to sit there without a story, to sit there without an agenda. All of these things that are kind of like the aspects of the self, to just loosen the grasp on them. So I will wrap it up. I believe I've shared this before in a different context. I can't remember what context it was, but was reminded of the lyrics of a song, a poem and a song by Leonard Cohen called Love Itself Was Gone. And he says, the light came through the window, straight from the sun above. And so inside my little room, there plunged the rays of love. In streams of light, I clearly saw the dust you seldom see, out of which the nameless makes a name for one like me. I'll try to say a little more. Love went on and on until it reached an open door. Than love itself. Love itself was gone. All busy in the sunlight, the flecks did float and dance, and I was tumbled up with them in formless circumstance. I'll try to say a little more. Love went on and on until it reached an open door. Then love itself was gone. Then I came back from where I'd been. My room, it looked the same, but there was nothing left between the nameless and the name. All busy in the sunlight, the flecks did float and dance, and I was tumbled up with them in formless circumstance. I'll try to say a little more. Love went on and on until it reached an open door. Then love itself was gone.
What's the title of that poem?
Love Itself Was Gone. Okay. And it's a beautiful song also. on an album that he released shortly after his he spent, I don't know, between 5 and 10 years in a monastery. So it was a result of Zen practice. And I think it's, there's something really important here, because from our human point of view, love is like the best thing. Just the sweetest, most awesome. I mean, so the thought that love itself is gone is almost like, well, you know, I'll love all that, like, you know, the flex did float and dance and I'm tumbled up with them and that's great. But then this, like, love itself was gone. What is that like? That sounds kind of bleak. But the truth of the matter is that, I, you know, there really is no separation. So at a certain level, even intimacy makes no sense. There have to be two things that are intimate with one another. I am the object of the love. I am giving the love. But really, when there's complete intimacy, there's not even that sense of connection or whatever. It's just non-separateness, I guess. So, like I said, very broad brush. I'll open it for comments and questions.
So, Domio, real quick. So when love itself is gone, that's basically, there was no separateness. So you didn't have to, it's not like love was missing. It's like there's no perspective for what you would perceive love.
Yeah.
It's not negative, it's a positive.
Yeah. And I think what the, my worry before I had some taste of what this meant personally, my worry was that letting go would result in a void. That love itself is gone would just be like, ugh, you know, just a giant nihilistic nothingness instead of a complete fullness, like a bright, luminous, complete fullness, which we are part of. So it's like, and again, it's not a thing, it's not a place, it's not like you can't grasp this, right? But nonetheless, that is the ground of our being. And when we have a sense of that, it's, you know, it is very a very positive thing. I think when I had a taste of this and I did a public, one of those public question and answer Mondo things, and a woman in the audience, she asked me a question. She said, "Doesn't sound like you're an atheist anymore." Because she said I was her poster child for atheism, like for rational, like, and I said, "I guess I'm not." I mean, for me, it does not, it does not appear in a form of a god. It doesn't, theism isn't for me, and yet it's a confidence and a faith in something deeper. Silvio.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to be here. I know there's a lot to be said here, and you only said that you kind of did like a general thing. So I'm with Okamura on this. There is, I think we should, when thinking stops during meditation, there's really just the world. It's just seeing, it's just perceiving, it's just the world. Everything arises in that same space. And there's no separation. I guess you could call that intimacy in a koan setting, maybe. There's also intimacy. Intimacy involves not necessarily always lovey-dovey, warm, positive feelings. I think we have to be intimate with anger. We have to be intimate with fear and digest all negative emotions that come to us and be intimate with those without necessarily reacting upon those. Just be intimate and digest them. I think that's very important, at least from my perspective and our practice, to be intimate with everything. Even when there's something unjust that we see it happen, and I know there's anger rising, even if we intervene, we should look at things as there's a Buddha there that hasn't awakened, maybe. That they're not separate, even if we have to stop the abuse, but they are not separate, so you cannot make me against something. That's what I think. Or, you know, make up opposites. So I think intimacy is a good word for it, but you can't, like you said, you can't really express it because you go beyond concepts. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Great. Great points there. Yes, indeed. I think this can permeate many different aspects of our life. And I like the whole point that intimacy goes beyond the obvious, right? It goes beyond the positive. It goes beyond with humans. It goes beyond, you know, feelings of affection and love, which are lovely. But yeah, it's almost like it's deeper than that, more profound than that. Marv.
Well, thank you for a wonderful talk. Deep into the heart, it seems, of Buddhist practice. Non-separation is what we think about all the time. I just wanted to make one tiny little point that occurred to me. When you were talking about unconditional acceptance, if anyone in our life has ever shown us that, and I was happy to have one person do that. It goes along with authenticity, it seems to me, in a different kind of non-separation. Hmm. You're not completely accepted, then you're performing a person you think the other person wants to be, which is different from who you are. So there's a separation within yourself. And it seems with that kind of intimacy with another person, you can also feel intimacy within yourself. Hmm. And that relates to a third term you brought up, which was practice, which is one of the ways we learn to be intimate with ourselves by unconditionally accepting ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Like you bring up, can we be intimate with anyone or anything if we're not intimate with ourselves? And yeah, so I think that is true. That's a huge part of our practice is becoming familiar, right? To study Buddhism is to study the self. It is to become more familiar with ourselves so that we can't, you know, because that would be the first step. You can't embrace and accept until you see. Yeshi. Oh, you're still muted.
It would help if I fix that. A few things. One of the piggybacking on what Sylvia and Marv said, another Leonard Cohen poem. Mm. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. Mm. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Mm. And I see that as what they're expressing about the intimacy with the discomfort, letting that closeness with the discomfort, the anger, the whatever, dot, dot, dot. But in light of the first poem, I think giving words at least in the English language, is close to impossible. And at least for me, it's more of, it's kind of like a resonance or electromagnetic field, and that doesn't make any sense either. But there is a sense of resonating or vibrating kind of like, almost like at a higher frequency, whether it's with a rock or an animal or a person or whatever, or even with a deep connection with creativity or guidance, inner guidance, and a faith. I'm not talking about a religious faith. I'm talking about a real confidence in letting go type of faith, at least for me. And there's almost this velvety texture to it without having any words or any sense really of a body, but there's this presence that is so filled and filling simultaneously, yet without having a container. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Okay.
It's like taking words, and I just think of like painting a sunset, right? Like, I'm going to take some orange and I'm going to, I don't know, like you're not going to capture a sunset, but you can make a beautiful painting of a sunset.
I once saw an extraordinary sunset upstate in Jay, New York, which is near the Canadian border. And I was on the property of an artist, a painter. And this sunset was 360 degrees, absolutely stunning. And he said, I'm not even going to try to paint this because no one will believe it's real. It's just too amazing.
Thank you. All right, Dave and Zendo here.
So I'm not going to say anything new, because the thing I was thinking the entire time you said at the very end, and because as you went on, I became less and less satisfied with that word intimacy, because like you did say at the very end, it in the English language, almost every time you use the word intimate, it means two things in a relationship. And I was trying to think of a better word, but I wasn't able to. I was thinking of awareness. I was thinking of unity. I was trying to think of a word that meant you became so intimate with something that you then became that thing. You became not separated from that thing anymore. So I don't know. That was just sort of my, I don't know what that word might be, if there is one.
It feels like the whole, like, it's the ultimate koan, right? Of individuality and non-separation of Buddhahood and ordinary beings. You know, if we're already connected, then what's the problem? But, well, there is. And I like how, you know, when we were talking about becoming intimate with even negative things, or intimate with parts of ourselves which are difficult to accept or whatever, there's still there's a warmth to that action. It's not just, you know, kind of a cold, like, I see it. It's opening up to intimacy as something personal and warm and positive. I don't know. When I imagine that kind of ultimate, like, my longing is completely fulfilled, and I do that sometimes to remind myself of how I'm not there. Because sometimes if I can imagine what that complete ease and intimacy feels like, and I recognize that's not actually how I'm walking around, right? So it just points out that little bit of a separation, or more than a little bit of a separation, that I'm walking around with this holding on to the sense of separateness or, you know, dukkha, whatever it is. So, but when I imagine that, I don't know, I imagine being held in an embrace by someone who, like, I just totally respect and trust. I respect their judgment. So when they, like, pat my head and they say, "You're fine. We love you. You're fine." You know, like, I believe them, right? As opposed to, yeah, well, like, I trust this being enough that when they tell me there's nothing wrong and I'm okay and I belong and there's nothing wrong with my life, you know, at least momentarily in that embrace, I can go, really? Really? And, like, just relax into that. And then, you know, and then when I imagine that, it reminds me of how I'm not living like that. And I want to live like that because, you know, that's where it is. We have to keep working. We have to keep trying to be more compassionate and increase justice in the world and all that. That is the nature of life. That is the manifestation of compassion. And yet at any point along the way, everything is perfect, just as it is. Yeah, Shay.
You just made me think of something else. I have not had that experience that you just described where I can think of, oh, this other person, where I can just sink in. It's like, really? It was like, that just doesn't exist in my experiential vocabulary. But as you were talking, what occurs to from my experience is that when I'm really in that resonance with whatever, as I said before, I'm filled, but there's no container. And as you were talking, I realized I'm also, in a way, a conveyor or a medium. And the only one way I could describe it is if I'm the water that the watercolor paints can come through, so the other being, whatever it is, sees the painting that they need to see to help them in that moment. But I'm not the colors. I don't choose them. But it's kind of like, I'm struggling with words. But there isn't a sense of a me-ness. And there's also often a sense of not only deep letting go, but a sense of wonder and mystery, because I don't know what's going to come through. I just know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's going to be totally what is needed in that moment.
Thank you. Ruth Ann, did you have something?
Yes. Early on in his Zen practice, Frank Ostashevsky said, a monk said to him, "Let go of your history, embrace the mystery." And I find, okay, that's cool. That's a place for me to go, or at least embrace that.
Thanks for possibility. Sharing.
Thank you for this talk.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Abiding in this ephemeral world, like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna parvanita. Thank you everyone for being here.